The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Overnight, some 1,350 flights you heard on the news disrupted, up to 5,000 Irish passengers affected, but in total 200,000 passengers. This is an airport that runs at 99% capacity, so you can see rescheduling flights for Saturday, Sunday is going to be chaotic. And obviously, you also heard on News Talk Breakfast that six flights transatlantic, which were en route, landed in Shannon Airport. So it is pretty chaotic. Joining us to explain what happened and the cause of it and different aspects of it, I should just say, after 10 o'clock, we'll have Owen Corrie. So if you have any questions, text them in. If you know of people that you're due to depart or arrive via Heathrow, we will have all those questions, Owen Corrie. Just get them into us. But it's a pleasure to welcome Enda Brady, international TV news anchor with TRT World, based in London, and of course a good former Wexford man, and Lieutenant Colonel, retired and regular on the PK show, expert on airport safety and security auditor, Kevin Byrne. Welcome to the programme. And what time did this kick off at?
About 11:30 last night, the fire broke out, Ivan, and thanks for having me on. So it's an electrical substation. Hayes is a very residential suburb of West London, right beside the airport. And basically what happened was about 200 phone calls went into the emergency services pointing out that this substation had caught fire. So it seems to be a transformer has caught fire. It is the main source of power going into Heathrow Airport, and the decision was taken very, very quickly that they must get the fire under control, but equally, today there will be no flights coming in or out of the airport. So this is huge, and I'm not even sure this will be fixed tomorrow. I mean, this is whatever the timescale is on Heathrow Airport opening, the knock-on effect on aviation will be felt well into next week.
So Heathrow, like Dublin, has two runways. We have a cap of whatever it is, 32 million. This has 84 million passengers a year. I mean, are most people going to Gatwick or Stansted, or what is actually plan B?
So some flights are going to Gatwick. Stansted and Luton, from what I'm hearing, are not taking that many flights. They're basically diverting flights left, right and centre. Some are going to Shannon. Some are going to Keflavik up in Iceland. Frankfurt is taking people. Basically, what we're looking at is the busiest airport in the world being taken out of service for at least 24 hours, and then a huge knock-on impact, you know, on people who will still be in the air right now. There will be flights that have left up from Australia, from the United States overnight before the alarm is raised. And what you will have now is schedulers inside the airlines trying to work out just where these flights can go. This is going to cost tens of millions of euros, because obviously airlines will be liable for hotel accommodation for all of the people travelling. 200,000 passengers were due to go through Heathrow in this 24-hour period.
Okay, beyond the travel disruption, two questions immediately struck my bad mind. One, was it malicious? Was it arson? Because If you wanted to disrupt London and get, you know, Heathrow a bad name, this would be a prime target for terrorists. And secondly, why wasn't there a plan B? I mean, I was speaking to the CEO of Shannon Airport, and I said, what if this happened to a Dublin airport or an Irish airport? Oh, and they have contingency arrangements for alternative sources, generators and so on. So where do we stand on those two questions?
Well, look, with regard to Plan B, everything you've seen in the UK for the last decade and a half, Ivan, there is no Plan B here. Everything gets by on a shoestring and a bit of luck. With regard to what you said about, is this malicious? Right now, we simply don't know. The fire brigade are there. They've got seven units, about 70 firefighters in total. They will launch their own investigation, and we haven't heard from the Metropolitan Police yet. It could be just completely accidental. It could be that an electrical transformer has just malfunctioned and the fire has happened, or it could indeed be malicious. We simply don't know. But I would imagine as soon as the fire brigade have worked out what the source of the fire was, or what the incident that led up to the transformer catching fire, if there is any foul play whatsoever, the Metropolitan Police will be on it quickly. That whole area is heavily under CCTV. But you're right, what was the backup plan? And right now, I think a lot of people will be very, very angry. 200,000 of them due to come in or out of Heathrow today.
All right, we let you go. And thank you very much indeed for that news update. And as I say, just one thing I would add on the disruption side. Ryanair, who is unaffected, it's mostly British Airways and Aer Lingus are affected because Ryanair don't use Heathrow. They have said that they've added 8 rescue flights between Dublin and London, Stansted, 4 on Friday, 4 on Saturday, to help passengers affected by the Heathrow closure. We will speak to Dara, their communications officer, later on the programme, but you can book these extra capacity flights. Kevin, regular, of course, Kevin Byrne, who's an expert in all this area. What was your first reaction when you heard the story?
I was very surprised. Funnily, I know Hayes in Middlesex. It's a suburb of London, basically. It's also considered the noisiest airport, or the noisiest suburb, I should say, of the whole city, because aircraft land low over that. I did a course there. But having one source of electricity was a known vulnerability, because I did a behind-the-scenes visit in Heathrow many years ago when it wasn't at 84 million passengers a year. But again, as Enda's just said, they haven't put in a second supply. Now, airports do have backup generators, by the way, and Heathrow is no different from that point of view. But that's only for the air traffic control system, the radars, the navigation aids, and the lighting for the airport's runways and taxiways. It's not designed to look after the rest of the buildings, which come in through the normal main grid supply, you know. And that'll, of course, involve check-ins, parking, security systems, baggage systems, the trains, the car parks, all that kind of thing, even the catering. Heathrow, funnily enough, is an airport built higgledy-piggledy, as it were. It doesn't have a lot of natural light, so it has a huge volume of lighting internal in the buildings in that regard. And when the main system goes down, there's nothing you can do. You simply cannot operate, even if the air traffic and the lighting on that system works. So it's a major failing.
Just on that, I happened to have lunch with Kenny Jacobs of Dublin Airport.
Indeed.
This week. And he said one of the things about nighttime flying was there something between midnight and 6 a.m. There's no flights allowed in Heathrow. Are you aware
Heathrow
of that?
Yeah, it had a very strict. I did a study of the third runway about 25 years ago when I was a student there. First of all, Heathrow, as you said, is 99% running at capacity. It's an immensely popular part of the UK infrastructure. It's the busiest international airport in the world, which means most people fly in and out. They're not internal flights in the UK, as it were. To buy a slot to land there as an airline costs an absolute fortune. But because of the environmental aspects, there is a curfew. I'm not sure if it's midnight to 7 a.m. It's quite generous from that point of view, but it's incredibly busy. And if you knock on one element of it, the whole lot falls apart and doesn't get put together. Even if the electricity is reconnected at 3 o'clock this afternoon, which they're promising, which probably won't happen, it will take 3 or 4 days because all of the flights coming in, as Enda says, Australia, Africa, the Middle East, Asia, North and South America, people fly to Heathrow from every corner of the world by day and by night. And that's not going to change anytime soon.
And it's a global hub. What are your feelings about the cause?
I'd say, you might remember many years ago when I was working for the Air Corps, the IRA fired Mark 14 mortar bombs onto runway 27 right, if I remember correctly. And none of the 4 bombs exploded deliberately because they wanted to make a statement. But I don't go for the conspiracy theory. I think this is just, as Enda has said, infrastructure which has a lack of investment, a box cut fire, and because they only had one source, it's going to be knocked out. If somebody had done a terrorist act or something to upset the country, they would have made a claim within 4 or 5 hours, and that hasn't happened overnight. So I'd say it's just one of those things. The knock-on effect is very serious. By the way, when I was a student 25 years ago, if you could land a 747, one 747 extra on each day of the year, you'd add £25 million to the economy of the Southeast. That must be multiples of that nowadays. So it is an incredibly important engine to the economy of the whole of the UK.
Would there be international reputational damage here?
Yes, probably. As I said, it is the prime airport to go. It's a major hub for British Airways, and that's going to cost them an absolute fortune because, you know, it's also a hub for other airlines, including Aer Lingus, because people fly in and out, as you know, Some of them come back to Dublin and go to the US through the pre-clearance at Dublin Airport and indeed Shannon. But the whole of the UK is going to be upset by this because it's world news. It's going to be on every news station because there are so many diversions, so many aircraft in different parts of the world, so many crews and people disrupted. You know, it's 200,000 passengers a day is not a small number of people to be upset, many of whom, by the way, fly on business class. So, yes, there will be reputational damage to the airport itself and indeed to the suppliers of the electricity in the first place.
So that brings us to the question of compensation. So in the first instance, if someone is discommoded, it's nothing to do with Heathrow. You don't ring them. You ring your airline to see what the alternative is. So the airlines have all these additional costs, disruption, relocating people. And they're going to say, well, who's going to compensate us for this? My question is, Heathrow Airport, who owns it? Is it the state and who will be liable?
No, it's a private company called Heathrow Airport Limited, and they own other airports as well. Very successful. It's literally a license to print money in some ways. It's a very profitable organization. But if you have to pay and recompense all the airlines that are discommoded, as I say, 200,000 passengers today, how many passengers tomorrow? And these aircraft are in different places, so you can't just get the original crew on board and fill it full of fuel and fly it back. Another knock-on effect, by the way, just to make it, if you fly an aircraft into somebody else's airport, even if it's Shannon or Stansted or Manchester or whatever it might be, usually there aren't enough people to handle them on the ground if it's a busy airport. You've got to wait your turn. The baggage will have to be sorted out. You may or may not get accommodation. So there's a huge amount of logistics involved in the whole matter. And then getting aircraft back to where they should be, because you have crews waiting in Heathrow to fly out again on their airline, it's a remarkably complex jigsaw puzzle.
So just say, you know, you're due to go from JFK into Heathrow and you're told, look, your flight is on Saturday, but there's already a full schedule on Saturday. How will they organise the slots when they do reopen?
Yeah, it's a complex matter. What some airlines do is put bigger aircraft on. For example, I'm sure if there's an Aer Lingus problem, they'll take off an A320 and put on a much twice the size A330 or some such thing, if they can do it. The only good news is this is not yet the summer season, so there is a little bit of extra capacity. And I'm heartened to hear that Ryanair is able to put on 8 more flights. They must have the crews and the aircraft available now. Other airlines will do the same thing. They want to get back into the operation as soon as possible. The problem is, as you said, if you've got Saturday and Sunday people, they're entitled to fly first, if you know what I mean. And indeed, Monday and Tuesday of next week, those people have firm commitments because it's a contract with the airline, so they'll want to go. You've got to fill in the people who haven't been discommoded into that system and fill up any little gaps you have. It's unfortunate.
It's more than unfortunate. For those involved, some 5,000 Irish passengers, we'll be hearing more about. Do text us if you have any specific flight queries. We'll have Owen Curry. But for now, my thanks to Kevin Byrne, Lieutenant Colonel retired and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. All right, time for this.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
Yeah, well, we've been telling you all week, today is the day. This afternoon, Barry will make the call and you can win a whopping €102,000 exactly. A life-altering amount of money. So, text the word PLAY to 57557. That will cost you, if you want to enter, £250 plus your standard message rate to play. You have to be over 18 and you're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. All the conditions on the News Talk website. So if Barry rings you, you must answer the phone within 5 rings. And if you say the amount, 102,000, no cent, no other euros, 102,000 exactly, you can walk away with that money, as simple as that. So text PLAY if you want to win to 57557. All right, we'll be talking to not only Owen Curry, but also Ryanair later on.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.